Hello and welcome to today's episode of my podcast. This episode is the first episode that's being recorded in English, which is because my partner today is Elena Stallings. She is originally from Ireland and is now living in Barcelona. And we got to know each other a few years ago when we were both living in Madrid. She currently works as a PhD researcher focusing on sex and gender medicine. And this is also what we are going to talk about today. Hi, Elena. Thank you so much for being my guest today. Would you also like to introduce yourself and the work that you're doing?
Hi, Joanna. Thank you for inviting me on your podcast this afternoon. Well, as you said, I'm a PhD researcher and I'm finishing my PhD in health sciences from the University of Alcalá de Henares, and I'm planning to submit my thesis this month. I have been working in the unit of clinical biostatistics at Hospital Ramón y Cajal in Madrid for the past 4 years now and loving it. And while working here, I have been involved in the Sex Complex Project, which is a large government-funded project studying the sex differences in different pathologies. And so in our unit, we've been doing evidence synthesis-based systematic reviews and that kind of thing to do with this project. My research is focused on evidence synthesis, carrying out systematic reviews to compile all the evidence. Within the Sex Complex Project, we have carried out a review on sex as a prognostic factor in sepsis. And we are in the middle of a review on sex as a prognostic factor in pulmonary embolism. We have also carried out a study on how researchers use the terms sex and gender in their reviews.
That sounds very interesting. Shall we start with the question, what is the difference between sex and gender?
Sure. That's a very important question that even not many researchers know the answer to that question, which is unfortunate. But sex is the attribute of being male or female in organisms such as humans or other living beings that have the ability to reproduce sexually. So sex refers to the person's biological and physiological characteristics, such as the reproductive organs and genetic differences. And the correct terms to use when referring to sex are male and female. Whereas gender is a socially constructed concept, and it refers to the roles, behaviors, and characteristics that a society imposes or considers appropriate for a specific sex. So the correct terms for gender are men and women, and for children, boys and girls. And these terms are similar, they're intertwined and they're connected, but they are different. Sex, biological characteristics, and gender, social characteristics. Mm-hmm. Sex is binary, one or the other, whereas gender is, it's a spectrum. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily you're one gender or the other, you're a woman or you're a man, but it's like a linear spectrum on a scale of this or that.
I see, yeah.
Completely.
I think that's also very interesting from a language perspective, because in German, we don't have these clear differentiations. And Well, in English, sex is the same word for intercourse and for, well, sex in terms of biological.
That's true.
And in German, that's not the case either. I mean, we have the word sex, but it's also, it's only referring to intercourse.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So, and then sex in, pardon?
That's a problem in a few different languages. I think I also saw in Greek, they only have one word for the sex and gender. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that problem is influencing into the research. And so we can't completely blame the researchers, because maybe it's a Greek or it's a German researcher writing an article about sex or gender or what about whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's not completely their fault that they're not using the words correctly when they don't have it. Disconnection in their own language.
So what did you find out about how people use these terms in research?
Well, the problem is they use them interchangeably, as if they were just synonyms of each other, when, as we now know, that's not the case. So for example, they might use the word gender in one part of an article and then switch to using the words male and female. Mm-hmm. And you can be a bit confused thinking, well, they said gender, but now they're talking about male and female. So are they talking about sex really or gender? And as a researcher informed on this topic, you kind of have to make an inference yourself as to which they are talking about, gender or sex. And the majority of the time, they are talking indeed about sex, even though they're referring to gender. They're just trying to interchange the words so as not to be repetitive, even mm-hmm. though it's not mm-hmm. the correct thing to do.
Yeah. So can you most of the time like distinguish and figure out the meaning, even if the words are not used in the correct sense?
Generally, yes, because we would generally assume that they were talking about sex unless there were specific things written about, oh, the society, social aspects of the disease or something like that. And there has been one or two cases, though, where we have had doubts and it hasn't been as clear. So if that's the case, you try to contact the author of the study for clarity mm-hmm. and get a response directly from the researcher themselves.
Yeah, that sounds like a good solution, though. Yeah. I would like to now ask you some things about your PhD thesis, which has the title Personalizing Medicine by Sex and Gender. You already named some examples before where sex and gender play a role in medicine. Can you tell us more about your thesis? Like, what exactly did you research on? What were the experiments, if you did any? What were the results? And what is your conclusion?
Sure. Well, my thesis and my research for my thesis consists of a few different parts. First of all, there were no experiments per se, because I'm not a lab-based researcher, totally evidence-based research and evidence synthesis. So reviewing studies that have already been carried out and methodology and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So first of all, a few years ago, I started working on a Cochrane review of sex as a prognostic factor in pulmonary embolism. And while Cochrane is an international organization that carries out systematic reviews to facilitate evidence-based decisions about health and healthcare. And while that, it took a while for this project to get momentum and lift off, but finally, this January, we published the protocol for the review. And at the moment, we're carrying out the review itself. So we don't have any results on that just yet. But when it's a Cochrane review, a lot of research goes into the making of the protocol and the methods and everything. So it has to be perfect. Mm-hmm. So we hope to finish that this summer. And well, while carrying out the preliminary database searches for this project, we realized that we were going to retrieve a lot of references to screen through our search strategy. So I started working on developing a prognostic factor search filter to reduce the number of references needed to screen. And that was finished this year, and the article will hopefully be published soon. We developed a highly sensitive filter for prognostic factor studies. And this will help many review authors in the future. And earlier on, I talked about how we had carried out a systematic review on sex as a prognostic factor in sepsis. And also while carrying out that review, the search yielded an enormous number of studies and references that we had to screen through to be able to see which ones we were going to be able to include in the actual review itself. I think we had maybe 20,000 references that you have to look at in the abstracts. And then you have to do a second round of screening to look at the full text as well. So this prognostic factor filter, hopefully it will eliminate directly a lot of those studies that are irrelevant. Whereas this review of sepsis, it wasn't part of my thesis. It was part of one of my colleagues' thesis, actually, who's also finishing up her thesis this summer and hoping to submit it soon. We found that there wasn't a lot of evidence for sex differences in the outcome of mortality in sepsis, and also that the certainty of the evidence was very low. So in other words, more research and more studies are needed to have a higher certainty of the evidence there to see if there is a sex difference or not. Then the coronavirus pandemic started last year. And so my thesis work was paused for a little while. And instead, I became involved in an interesting project looking at the effects of COVID-19 on pregnant women and their babies. And this project was in collaboration with the University of Birmingham and the World Health Organization. And we published a living systematic review in the BMJ on the effects, showing that pregnant women were less likely to show symptoms of COVID and were also more likely to be admitted to the ICU with severe COVID. So my thesis took a little bit of a turn here, and I ended up being able to include this project into my thesis in the end. Mm-hmm. So got back up and running quite quickly.
That's very interesting. Why did you choose these illnesses specifically? Like you mentioned sepsis, and the other one was pronounced super quickly by you. So can you please repeat it? My English has its limits. Yeah.
Pulmonary embolism. Well, they weren't really chosen by me exactly. These illnesses were chosen because, as I mentioned earlier, I'm working as part of in a project called Sex Complex, which is a government-funded project in my hospital. And within this project, there is, I believe, six different units or six different departments that are involved. So my unit of biostatistics is one of those. Another one is the department of maybe microbiology or infections. So that's where sepsis came into play here. So we were able to collaborate, my unit carrying out systematic review with the knowledge of the department of microbiology and infections. And then another unit or department that is involved in the Sex Complex project was the Department of Pulmonology. And so we have great clinicians there with a lot of knowledge and who produce a lot of studies and a lot of articles. And so we were very happy to collaborate with them on this project as well.
Well, and the research on COVID obviously was because it just was there and it was just so present. This virus affects people in so many different ways, like, and also it affects children differently than it affects women, than it affects men. Yeah, and also age seems to play a role, also the age in adults.
Definitely.
What do you think are the mechanisms that cause illnesses to affect men or women differently?
I think there is factors that are related to the immune system, that there's different genetic factors related to immune system that can cause minor changes here and there. And also there is biological structural differences. So for example, pregnant women are more immune compromised than women who aren't pregnant or men. Their chest cavity is being pushed up. They are at increased risk of blood clots. So thus pregnant women are also at an increased risk of pulmonary embolism. And so small things like that.
Yeah. So what implications did the results of your study had, the study about pregnant women and COVID-19?
That study actually has had a huge impact worldwide. It was one of my first, I haven't published very many studies, to be honest. I'm still a very young professional researcher in my career. And so it was one of my first. And it to date, we only published that in September. And right now it's been cited in other studies 230 times already since September. So that's quite a high impact article. As I said, it's a living systematic review. So that means that it's still ongoing. By living, we are updating the search, we are updating the database that we have and everything, carrying out all the procedures of data extraction weekly. The reason why we made it a weekly living systematic review was because we started this back last April, at the end of March, last April, just when the pandemic was really getting way and starting. So the research was there, the studies were there, but we knew there was a lot more to come. And that's been evident as we've published it in September, but we published it again with an update in March. In September, we had included 77 studies. Mm-hmm. And this March, when we published the update, we had included, I believe, 192 studies.
Wow.
So that just shows how much more research is going, and it's an ongoing, rolling thing. Mm-hmm. And the impact of our conclusions, they can be used for clinical guidelines, to aid clinicians and doctors, nurses in making their treatment decisions, to be more aware that, pregnant women don't always show symptoms. We need to take that into consideration. Pregnant women, so something like the vaccine as well that is important is that studies haven't been done very many on pregnant women with the vaccine. Mm-hmm. But we've seen that, you know, if a pregnant woman gets severe COVID, it's not always a good outcome, and it's a lot more difficult for the mother and the baby. So it's better for them just to get the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That study had a high impact worldwide. It was reported in the news and everything back in September when it was first published.
Great. Nice. Were you or any other colleagues of your team interviewed about the results of this study?
Well, I wasn't personally, but my boss, Javier, yes, he was, I believe, by two different Spanish newspapers. And also the team from the University of Birmingham, they gave many different interviews to UK papers and international papers as well.
Can you say the name of the study again, so interested people can Google it afterwards? I think I'm also going to Google it afterwards.
Yes, it's called Clinical Manifestations of COVID-19 in Pregnant Women. And I can send you the link so that you can post it with this.
Great, thank you. So when you do research on drugs, like a medication, do you have to use different designs depending on whether you test men or women?
Right now, I believe it's not done, no, because there are no specific, if you go into the hospital and you have a pulmonary embolism, you're not going to get a specific drug because you are a female versus a male. So mm-hmm. There's not specific designs for doing these experiments because you need this drug to work equally okay for males and females. Mm-hmm. Although in the future, I hope there could be drugs that work excellent for females that are different than drugs that work excellent for males. But at the moment, we're not there yet. So to answer the question, no, there's not specific designs for studies for this sex versus this sex. But something different that while I was writing the introduction of my thesis, something that I was struggling with and fighting against was that I kept trying to separate sex into one thing and gender into another when mm-hmm. writing about different diseases or illnesses and things like that. And like, sex does this and gender does that. But at the same time, they kept coming back and intertwining together, because even though testosterone is a biological thing, it's a sex difference. It also leads into gender, because when you think of something like aggressiveness, that's not necessarily a sex thing, but men are more aggressive because they have higher levels of testosterone. And both of these things, they just lead into one another. And that's what I was fighting with internally while writing the introduction part of my thesis.
Yeah, I get the point, yeah. And I guess then there are also the environmental factors, because like behavior is also shaped by the environment.
Yeah,
so definitely. Yeah, there is this hormonal basis of testosterone, and then there is like there are these behavioral rules, or there are these cultural standards that also influence like how we behave.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree.
So you said the goal would be that there was medication that works like excellent for women and excellent for men.
Yeah, probably not the same medication.
Yeah.
Maybe a higher dosage of this with a combination of this drug A and something different for males. But right now, I think what we have is an okay drug that works okay, or maybe it works good for both sexes, males and females, but I think there's room to improve there. And that's what personalizing medicine through sex and gender is, and that's what we need more of. Mm-hmm. To see if there is sex and gender differences in outcomes and diagnosing and all of this stuff.
And is there a bias for the medication, like being directed more to one sex or to one gender? Because I know from the sexual sciences that like for a very, very long time, like the research has put men into the focus, and men's sexuality was researched and men's genitals were researched. And the research on female genitals and especially on female sexuality is quite young. I think it was only like in the last around 20 years that specifically female sexuality was researched. And I don't want to go too much into detail about this, but what this has led to is that results that came out for men were automatically like transferred to women. And it was assumed that women just must have the same results, or let's say just work the same as men do, when in reality, as you said, men and women are just different, which also leads to a lot of misunderstandings. Because if a female body doesn't function like that, but the implication that the studies bring is they should work like that, this can lead to like beliefs in a woman's head that, well, then I guess something's wrong with me.
Completely agree. And well, in terms of sexuality, I'm not sure, but in terms of like medicine and clinical trials for medications, drug development, completely there's a bias there. It was not so long ago that there was, I forget what exact year, but that the NIH, the National Institute of Health in the US, mandated that you need to use both sexes in your experiments. Because many times you might see researchers using just all male mice in their experiments.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, female animals in experiments are more difficult, more complicated. They have a hormonal cycle. You might need, depending on the animal as well, I think I read, I don't remember which animal, but has you might need four different stages of, or ages of mice to compete with just one, a female mice to compete with just one male mice. So you're talking about added expense, added labor, hours, all of this. Then also, that's in the animal experimentation part. Then when you're looking at clinical trials, a majority of that is still males instead of females.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely needs to be more equal. And we need to be seeing equal numbers of the females included in trials as well.
So right now, could we say that a lot of drugs, a lot of medication is designed for men?
I think you would be correct in saying that, yes. Yeah, I think that is where the future of personalizing medicine by sex and gender is leading us, to this pathway where we are going to divide it into having specific medications for sex and gender, which is starting to happen with some medications now that I think of it. I mean, I remember seeing in one supermarket, there's, I don't know if it's a type of paracetamol, I think maybe Panadol. They have a specific type of Panadol for when you're on your menstrual cycle to help with period pain.
Mm-hmm.
I have not tried it myself. I don't know if it works any better than the regular Panadol, but I think, yeah, that's what we're going to see more of in the coming years, medicine specifically. I've seen vitamins for women. oh, these vitamins are specifically for females and or for women, help you build strong bodies. And there's probably those for men too. I also have not tried those, but who knows, maybe they work.
Yeah. And where do you think that we are standing right now as a society or as humans? Is it going to be like expected that in the next years there will be a change, that more females will be included into trials, into research, that there is actually, is the awareness already there? Is it increasing? Or is it still something that, well, some people notice, but nothing's really like done?
I think change is coming for sure. I think change will happen. Change is always something that is slow to happen though. So, I mean, in the next few years, maybe we won't see too big of an impact, but in the next 10 to 15 years, I think we could definitely see more medications on the market specifically for different sexes and more research being done as well, because I think right now we're still at the ground level of the basics, doing primary studies to see if there's sex differences there, to see if these sex differences exist, then compiling all these studies to see in a systematic review to see, okay, well, what is the conclusion? Is this a sex difference or not? And that this is the groundwork that needs to be done first before we can say, okay, we need this medication to be sex specific.
So yeah,
I think we're still at the bottom, but change will happen. And some countries are doing better than others. Canada is actually doing, I think, one of the best. They've got a whole institution set up looking at the sex and gender differences. And Canada does some great sex and gender research. And Spain, I think, is maybe starting to do well as well. I mean, we had this project funded, the Sex Complex Project, which has been really interesting to be a part of. And hopefully we can get more projects up and running like this to study these sex differences and to see what else needs to be done.
Well, so many things, ideas, inputs are coming to my mind right now. Because now I'm starting to think, like, what is it like in psychotherapy research, like in mental health research, in so many more, like in basically every research? I'm really interested now what the like status quo is there at the moment, like how much this is taken into consideration already, that, well, it is just different, and different new research needs to be done, or, well, let's say different factors need to be considered.
Sure.
And yeah, I definitely have something to do now for the weekend. Or
definitely. I mean, talking about mental health issues, I think I read, for example, schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
Who is more likely to suffer from schizophrenia, males or females? Males.
Mm.
So should there be something that is done there, maybe in a preventative way or something like that? For sure. Because it's not just looking at the outcomes when it comes to looking at sex and gender medicine, but also a lot of times the incidence rates might be higher in males versus females, or different things like that. So maybe there can be preventative measures put in place before. Public health is about preventing the disease before it actually happens. So
yeah. As far as I am aware, yes, there is definitely like studies that show that some illnesses are more likely in women and some illnesses are more likely to affect men. And I mean, it even starts in children, like, well, boys are more likely to develop ADHD than girls are. So there are definitely differences. Yeah.
Definitely.
Apart from the research, what do you think about the idea of having different doctors for males and females?
I think, yeah, that could be an improvement. I mean, the whole world needs medical attention that is specific for them. If we're going to be going in the route of having medication that is specific for each sex, males and females, why not go that extra step as well and train doctors that, okay, you're going to be specifically for females and specifically for males. I mean, they're going to be trained specifically in the anatomy of each one. And the same goes for gender. I mean, gender medicine is also another issue that, you know, I mean, for example, men are often a lot less likely to go to the doctor than women. So a doctor is dealing with men needs to have some other kind of strategy to not entice, but to, I don't know, convince men to come to the doctor before the problem is too big.
Like to make it more attractive to them to go to the doctor.
Exactly. So obviously this is not kind of feasible for every specialty to have a male and a female doctor, probably not. But for something like a GP, a general practitioner, I could see that happening for sure. Just as you reminded me earlier, like children have their own doctors. They have pediatricians because a kid's body is not the same as an adult. Mm-hmm. Just like a male's body isn't the same as a female. We react differently. We need different things that sometimes a doctor does not understand all of that at once. And that leads on to like better education as well is needed in medical schools, focusing on these issues.
I think it's pretty exciting. Like when you look forward to how much more can be done, like how much more research can be done and how much more could be done, like at the universities, like at teaching, like how much more could be done in practice. So that's really exciting, I think. I wonder what transgender people may think about this. There has to be done research on this too.
That is true. And that's just like everything is slow to start. I mean, it'll be slow to start and since it's a very relatively new area. But I think in time that will come as well. Something that pops to mind is, I mean, for example, right now is bathrooms. You know, we've always traditionally had male bathrooms and female bathrooms. And now I think in a lot of places, they are including transgender bathrooms. You're transgender, you can go into this bathroom or you can go into whichever one you feel you belong to. And I think the same will happen in medicine. It will take longer to see it and see the impact, but it will come.
Mm, yeah.
It's an exciting topic.
Okay, so I will have one last question for you. What do you think is needed for better medical support? What could be done?
Well, I think more training in sex and gender issues for health professionals needs to happen, such as courses in medical school to deal with these specific issues. And a more overall awareness of the issues that can face males versus females and women versus men. And more research needs to be carried out on these issues in both primary research and in evidence synthesis. And I mean, if the primary research is not carried out well when looking at these sex and gender issues, it can be difficult doing the evidence synthesis after. For example, we have actually just submitted an article to be published on studying sex as a prognostic factor in systematic reviews and the components of the systematic review that need to be changed due to sex being the prognostic factor. Because sex varies a little bit compared to age or race or other prognostic factors. Sex normally doesn't change over time. And sex is also not a thing that is also not a prognostic factor that is usually measured. I mean, it's easily seen normally, but it's not something that's measured like your blood sugar levels or something else like that when you go into the hospital. Mm-hmm. So for those reasons, there are certain components when you're doing a systematic review that need to be changed due to sex being the prognostic factor. And we've just submitted an article to be published on that. So keep an eye out for that too.
Yeah, definitely will. If you give me the name later for the article, I will also post it in the description here.
And fingers crossed it gets published like in the next week or two.
Yeah, So thank you so much for this very interesting interview.
Thank you. It was fun. Bit of a practice for my thesis defense.
Sounds good. And let's say if someone hears this and would like to get in touch with you just to ask you further questions about your research or about this interview, how could people get in contact with you?
They can reach me by email or on LinkedIn, and I will pass those over to Joanna.
Okay, yeah, then I'll give the links into the description too.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. I wish you a great day and see you soon.
Thank you, Joanna. Thanks for having me. Bye.